Think stop?
Just a minute, I better ask that question. I just ask you whether your interest involved in oxidation going from the more abstract or the more theoretical to the more concrete or practical uses of the study of oxidation as a result of your being here at SRI. Yeah, it's on now. I just wanted to get the question onto the recorder.
Well, I think the operation at U.S. Rubber was the most efficient one I was ever in, mm-hmm. because of the variety and the health. But perhaps one of the most interesting and challenging was the oxidation program that I ran here, where I had government money for bait, and I had up to 20 companies putting money right. into it.
Right.
This meant that I was doing some interesting basic research. First, I knew it was useful or they wouldn't pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And third, the contract called for me or somebody in the group to visit each company each year.
I see.
So this required a trip to Europe almost every year. And one year, it turned out that it was really more economical to go around the world via Japan.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And some of the other people in the group were offered the opportunity, and some mm-hmm. one turned it down and one took it.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to get something started by this, like this again, because it's a fascinating combination of really basic research and something that can be useful now.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I would like to do with the polymer aging program, but I never got off on the same scale.
Mm-hmm.
With the studies in the dark, I got maybe 5 sponsors. Presently, I have only 2,
mm-hmm.
Exxon Chemical and Shell Development. These are places with some savvy,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
they're putting this to use and getting some ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it pays my way in the organization here.
Mm-hmm.
The Institute is making money off of me.
Mm-hmm.
That's my security.
Yes.
Now, does that answer your question?
Well, when you were visiting the companies, were they...
They were using me as a consultant, and they were pumping me for all they could get, and sometimes they would give me some information, and sometimes they wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I was always treated as a VIP.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So obviously the information that you were yielding as a result of your program must have been of some
That's
value
right.
to them.
Some companies were in it for more than 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wanted to know, your more current work is certainly closer to the applied field, or the kinds of polymers you're looking at now are the kinds of things that people use every
These
day.
These are real-world problems, important
yes.
ones.
Yes.
But I'm using a basic approach on it and doing something that nobody has ever done before, and they will understand
mm-hmm.
what we've got when we get it.
Okay.
I think that most of the people in academic work would probably turn up their nose at this. It's all right with me. I think I'm more useful than they are.
Yeah.
And some of the postdocs that I'm turning out are going out in the industry with training, useful training,
yes.
when they couldn't get anything but a postdoc when they came out of the university.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you...
So, a lot of people, particularly abroad, address me as professor. I never made it past instructor. And once in a while, I think of making them wisecrack, but I don't.
I think, considering the kind of work you've done over the last 40 years or 50 years, actually, the title is very deserving. But at any rate,
I think they mean well, but
yes.
I'm not particularly
honored. Give me your perception of...
We were turning out lots of papers on copolymerization and transfer. I had lots of academic contacts because those people were interested in it, and I got a lot of invitations to go around and talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But as I went into GE and published much less, these contacts sort of faded away. Everybody's direction of research changed.
Yeah.
And now my generation is disappearing from the research. Now, let me see what I did there.
Can you give me your perceptions of how the transition took place from classical organic chemistry, the Roger Adams type, to through the rise of physical organic chemistry, and then what I perceive as the integration of the two? How did you see all that taking place? You did say earlier that Stieglitz was doing very early work in physical organic chemistry, and yet there was never any concerted effort until the 30s, late 20s.
The next case I know about, I think, is that of Conant. Well, wait a minute. Ingold, obviously an early instigator in England.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, Conant was the instigator in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned out some very good people who went on with it.
Mm-hmm.
I know Bartlett and Cleland and Westheimer. There may be, therefore, Conant was the leader, instigator in this country. Cash. Started out in physical organic chemistry in the middle 20s, but I don't think he made very much impression.
Mm-hmm.
He had a rather weird theory of organic chemistry, or mechanism of reactivity in organic chemistry.
This was that electromere.
It was, but he had an idea, a general idea about electronegativity.
Mm-hmm.
Which he understood, and perhaps very few other people ever did. But it was based on heats of combustion of organic compounds. When he got out of Chicago, he went more or less directly to the University of Maryland.
Well, he'd been a Chicago student.
Yes.
Before. Who had he worked with?
This balloonist in Wilmington. Let's see.
That's all right. I think that information is available to me, so I can.
Worked on a dye problem. A French balloonist. I will think of his name eventually.
Okay.
I don't know how directly he went to Maryland, but eventually got a job on the staff there.
Mm-hmm.
According to him, they didn't have any equipment but a ring stand and a Bunsen burner, and these were in poor order. And so, wanting to start research, he started out on library work.
Mm-hmm.
And through the Bureau of Standards in Washington, correlated heats of combustion and tried to make a reactivity theory on it. But he did a good job, I understand, of compiling heats of combustion and picking the good ones.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he knew the literature well enough to know where the problems were.
Mm-hmm.
bromide for 50 to 100 years previously, different people have been reporting different products.
This is addition reactions of allobromide?
HBr to allobromide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I got quite different results. And there wasn't any system at all. So he decided that the results were due to electromers of allobromide, and he was going to look for it. So while the theory may have been weird, he knew where to look. Now, I think somewhat the same thing happened with the pentene.
Mm-hmm.
And he started some of his early students in that field.
Mm-hmm.
But either the results were inconclusive or the public didn't believe
it. Mm-hmm.
But when the work at Chicago on allobromide and propylene and so on came out, then people started to pay attention, and he was off.
At any time, did you feel that you were sort of further ahead in your understanding of these problems than Firas was? Sometimes I had the impression that he didn't always know what was going on. Not from his published work, but
not that I would mention, not worth mentioning, when I was working with him.
Mm-hmm.
I know in one case, I think it was the addition of HBr and HCl to, maybe it was some unsaturated chloride. I think I was largely responsible for resolving the radical and non-radical products clearly, without much help from him or even his knowledge of just what the details of what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the most extreme case I can think of. Now, he took the war and Hitler more seriously than the average American. He worked very hard on war research. After the war, he had some kind of a breakdown. I wasn't there. I've had conflicting reports, ranging from the fact that he was really out, was in a sanitarium for a month or two, to the fact that it didn't amount to anything serious. However, I don't know how much you're still taking this.
Yep, yep.
I don't know how much he accomplished after that.
Mm-hmm.
One view is that he never fully recovered his old power, and that Newtonberg ran the show. Another one, and that without Newtonberg, he wouldn't have gotten much of any work after 1950. Another one is that he was still calling the main problems, and Newtonberg was executing it. But he was very dependent on Newtonberg. And it may be, well, it has been indicated to me that He didn't do any reading of the literature, and he depended on Nuremberg to keep him informed and even to read some of the literature to him.
I see.
On the other hand, to talk to him, it would seem as perky as ever.
Did he talk over much about scientific problems after that? Late 40s or?
Through the 40s and into the beginning of the 50s, I would at least call on him every time I went to Chicago.
Uh-huh.
But then I began to get less and less, I guess. The reasons I'm not sure about. And I didn't talk to him so much in his later years.
Mm-hmm. Did you think?
Remember once I refereed one of his papers, and then when I went to see him, he said, "Did you do this?"
He recognized your style of criticism, I take it.
He might have. Well, I think there was a problem in his kinetics and conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I think I soothed him and got some changes.
Do you think that the World War II had much to do with the development of physical organic chemistry? You were certainly utilizing it on practical kinds of problems, I mean, or basic research on it.
I think I wasn't around enough to know, but I'll give you an opinion. I think there was rather little physical organic chemistry in the universities during the war.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing some. The rubber companies were applying it to the extent they could. Something must have been going on in industry. I think that Shell must have been doing something. I suspect DuPont and others.
You mean they were doing something along physical organic lines?
Yeah. Yeah.
The reason I ask is because after the war, it was sort of a physical organic just sort of burst on the scene at that point, and not only a great deal of material come out of the academia with the universities, but the industry was willing to accept these people sort of for the first time.
And the free radicals and polymerization gave it a big boost.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that the a lot of the big growth in physical organic chemistry in the 40s was in the free radical aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it had applications clearly.
That's right. Even Bartlett had turned to free radical chemistry, and he was doing kinetics with a rotating sector and things like that.
Yes. Great constant, top polymerization.
Yeah.
Maybe only Brown and Weinstein continuing the hydrolysis.
Bartlett was doing hydrolysis work because they were, Swain and Bartlett were doing the mustard gases at that time. I mean, it was a sort of a war-related problem, but it was yielding neighboring group participation results. And Rinstein apparently was very upset when he found they'd done all that work.
On the other hand, at the Mechanisms Conference at Northwestern, which would be 1948 or 50,
yeah,
they had Engel and several other solvolysis people there.
Mm-hmm.
And coming out of the meeting, Westheimer said to me, "This seems to me like this is discussion is analogous to the old theological question of how many angels could dance on the head of a pin." So I think it was over the top, over the hill,
mm-hmm,
at that time.
You know, all that work that was done in the 50s and the 60s, you think was just trimming on the cake?
I think it was largely a waste of time. During the 50s or early 60s, Rinstein visited me, had him for dinner. He said, "So, has anything practically useful ever come out of this solvolysis work?" He said, "I don't care whether it did." Then he said, "Well, I think that maybe it was some use for in a reaction for Hercules in some sort, something like that."
I don't think he was ever concerned with the practical applications of his work. I think he was
thereby missing the boat.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I have found first-rate scientific problems to work on, but in addition, they have the practical application to give them a kick.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get two for the price of one, I sell it for one.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you were being paid by a variety of institutions to at least turn some of your attention to practical applications.
Yes, but I found that this whole polymerization work attracted great academic attention.
Yes, it certainly did.
And it was useful besides.
Yeah. As I told you, it was introduced in an advanced organic class, and it had nothing to do. The class was not a class in polymerization or anything of that sort. It was just the high regard that certainly George Wayland had for it. I suspect maybe some of that had to do from the fact that you're an old and good friend of his, but I think when Wayland had respect for something, he talked about it, and if he didn't, he wouldn't have said a word.
Well, I gather that Rinstein made a good deal of use of our work and data and
mm-hmm.
teaching at UCLA.
Uh-huh.
This, for a long time, this was the principal body of available work on relative reactivity of free radicals.
Yes.
And substrate.
Yeah.
There wasn't much else.
Mm-hmm. Well, you and Chavez Welling were really interested in stabilities of radicals and how that applied to reactivity at that time. He published a number of papers of that sort.
Let me go over and get my...
If you have anything further to tell me about your perceptions of the development of physical organic chemistry, I'm all ears. Anxious to...
At least a few years ago, industry or applied chemistry was a dirty word in a good many chemistry departments, as far as I can make out. I don't know the extent to which it still is.
I think not. I think more and more...
Correct about a few years ago.
There's no question about it, I think.
Okay.
Louis Hammett had said to me that you know, we spent all of our time training people to be academic chemists, and 75 or 80% of them ended up in industry. But I think today more people are worried about the academic industrial interface. At least they talk about it, whether they're doing anything about it or not. The interesting thing is that industry is calling for fewer and fewer consultants from the universities. They seem to be cutting back on that. Whether that's an important part of the interface, I don't know. Some industrial outfits are talking about either bringing in faculty members on a sort of a sabbatical basis, or trying to interact with the with universities in another way. I don't know. Have you heard much about any of this?
No, I see the CNE news and the associated publicity. I know some of the educational groups in the ACS are much concerned about interface. I think a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Really more concerned about money.
Well, there's no question about that. You've seen through the guys, but I think there'll be a lot of good that comes out of it.
Yes. It can't help but do some good.
Yeah.
We are entitled to a dessert, which you will soon have a chance to order. You can hear what they've got.
He said what success you've had is largely due to two great pieces of luck, and those were?
One was when Stiglitz diverted me from high school teaching to research.
Mm-hmm.
And the other was when I connected with U.S. Rubber. That's all. And what used to be the British Rubber Producers Research Association near London in the 1940s. They did a remarkable job at starting the study of autooxidation of hydrocarbons and of natural rubber. And they gave no degrees. But they had a limited objective. We were very successful in attaining it.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, I rescued Walling from DuPont. He has said so.
Yes, he sort of implied as much to me as well.
He was the best of the students I had seen at Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was asked whom I would like to increase my group there, that was my first choice.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little finagling.
Yes, I understand there was a bit sticky at that point. But go ahead, tell me what happened.
You probably heard it from him.
No, he didn't tell me what happened. He said that there was some kind of... he wasn't supposed to... I guess that was wartime already, and he wasn't supposed to go to another industrial firm. I can't remember.
U.S. Rubber was controlled by DuPont. And so we had to be very careful about hiring anybody away from them. Also, the rule was that if any time he was unemployed, he was subject to the draft at once.
Mm-hmm.
So it was finally arranged that he would resign from DuPont, and immediately he would have an offer from us. from U.S. Mm-hmm. Rubber. And that's the way it went. He apparently... I had a couple of difficulties at DuPont. I think he had been involved in an accident and was sort of partway behind the eight ball down there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess he was glad to get out and also into a place where he could publish.
He didn't mention the accident. He did say that he had difficulty with the dyes. He'd become allergic to the dyes.
Well, that may well be the case, too.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't on the inside track with the management.
I see.
Mm-hmm. But this is another case where he would like to have had an academic offer on leaving Chicago, and Karash couldn't produce it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Karash never placed one of his students in a first-rate school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Brown was a postdoc, went in through Wayne University, where Karash had a connection. And Walling got into Columbia on his own.
Yes, yes, I know that.
And I didn't get any offers at a time when I wanted them.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. You know, that's a piece of information I guess was there, and I just hadn't recognized it, the fact that Karash had not had
Don't think there's a single one.
And that was because of his ill standing.
But he just wouldn't play ball with the rest of the community. Now,
mm-hmm.
what